Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 25th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
So it's finally over.
This it is.
Big Brother thing. That we kept wondering if she was going to make it, Vanessa Russo. And how did it go? Because you're a fan of the show. I don't really watch it. I like the Survivor on before. And I saw her in the commercial where they're alive, getting on the makeup and stuff. I saw that stuff, but I never never watched the show. So how did it go?
Which, by the way, it's going to be a great Survivor season, too. I watched last night.
I think so. I you know, those second... Plus, they're all characters, too, so it should be pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. So, now, you know, I'm in fancy leagues in both of these now, so we did our...
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, we did our Survivor draft yesterday before the show. And then Big Brother, of course, I had the number one overall pick, and instead of taking Jameis Winston, I took Vanessa Russo. And back when I drafted, I'm like, I got to go with my heart over my head. You know, I love Vanessa, and I just think she's going to play this game too hard, and she's going to get voted out in the first couple weeks. I was right on the first part. She played the game really hard, but she played it so well. Probably one of the best players in Big Brother history, I think. And really was poised to win it all last night. And just as I put in the show notes here, got pipped on the river. So, you know, the way it works at the end, down to the final three, they'd be with three-part competition. And she won the first part by doing mind games with one of the other competitors and got her to drop off this swinging candy apple thing. If you never watched Big Brother, you don't want to understand any of this. But yeah, you'll totally laugh, right? So she totally used mind games there to get that girl to drop, which means that she moved automatically on to the final competition, which is huge. And then she just got lucky. The second competition, the girl lost. If the girl won, then they both would have gone to the finals because they had a deal. But the guy won, and then the guy beat her by one question in the final quiz and moved on. And he's a really smart player, and he told Vanessa, hey, you're the best player that's ever played this game, and I can't beat you, so take a hike. She got kicked out in third place, and then, of course, that guy went on to win. But it was exciting for him because he's a super nerd like I am, right? And a massive Big Brother fan, and he's been dreaming about being on the show his whole life, and now he got on, now he won it. So, and let's be honest, this guy who's a trombonist or something and lives with his mom really could use the $500,000 more than Vanessa Russo, who, you know, of course, reminded us in the last show that she's won $4.6 million playing poker.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, if you're tuning in late, Vanessa Russo's a poker pro. That's why we're talking about her. Just in case you don't follow that whole, because, you know, poker's not on TV that much anymore, and she's not on TV that much either.
Probably are some people that don't know.
Yeah. And she's a good friend of ours, too. Not a good friend, but I mean, she was a friend of ours when we were up at all of the events that, you know, they had for Chad and stuff. So we hung out with her a few times up in Jacksonville and talked to her in Vegas. And so it was so cool to see her do that well, even though I wasn't watching the show. I was just following her vicariously through your notes and conversations and stuff, but...
Yeah, so she was, she played the game exactly like I thought she would. Very cerebral. You know, I think back when we first started talking about this on the show, I was saying that I was really interested to watch her use game theory in action, because you don't really get to see that in poker.
Right.
And it was phenomenal to watch. It really was. Everything was a theory decision. And she had conversations with some of the smarter players, and was explaining that, and they were getting it, and obviously the dumber players had no idea what she's talking about. But so it was really fascinating to watch. The downside was, this girl cries a lot.
Vanessa
really
cries?
Surprising. Yeah, I'm just, you know, you had this vision of her just being this tough woman, right?
Yeah.
And she probably set the Big Brother record for the most tears in history.
Wow.
It was almost a joke, you know. And actually, a lot of my friends, that some were poker people, kind of knew her, and some weren't, and they're like, what is with this girl and the crying?
Wow.
Really shocking. And at the end, one of them made a mention of that in the post show, and she's like, yeah, you're totally right. I lost it way too often.
Yeah, when they get a chance to reflect, they notice that. Like, even happens on, like, Survivor 2 or any of these other shows. They look back and they're like, I can't believe I lost it that much. Or, yeah. I was going through a bad time in my life, you know, or something. But, yeah, that's too bad. I mean, it's an emotional thing. I mean, I can see that it's tough.
Yeah, here's the kind of thing. I always laugh with my wife, and I'm like, there's no crying in reality TV. It's not like Jeff Probst or Julie Chen came and snatched you out of your house and dragged you onto the show. You volunteered to be on their show. But that being said, I mean, this was the longest Big Brother in history. I think it was 90 days, so 3 months that they were stuck in this house, you know, cut off from the world. So I got to think that messes with you a little bit.
But yeah. That being said,
there were a lot of contestants that didn't shed a single tear that we saw either. So, but no, she was, if she played Monopoly, she would have owned the waterworks without even landing on it. So the other thing I want to mention before we move on to, I don't know if we've talked about this too much, but, you know, I believe it was May, like a month or two before she went on the show, she tweeted out that she was dating her new girlfriend, right? Mm-hmm. And at the time it was, you know, I think the tweet was something like, I'm not into labels, just love, right?
Right.
So it didn't seem like she was going to be like this new, you know, poster girl for the gay community, right? And it really never came up on the show at all. I mean, obviously she talked about Mel a lot, but there was never any kind of confessionals about, you know, being gay or whatever, right? Right. And but then at the end, you know, before she got knocked out, there's this thing where all the people, the jury, are discussing it, and one woman was upset that she kept swearing on the gay community when she was making deals that she ended up breaking. So I think that's interesting that it did come up. We just didn't get to see it on the show. And now I'm kind of interested to see where she takes this in her professional life outside the house now.
Yeah.
Whether in poker or DJing, which is apparently what she's doing now as well, too. And it'll be kind of interesting, I guess, because, you know, for a while we thought it was just going to be nothing. But maybe it is something for her.
So let me get this straight. When she was trying to make deals with people, that they would try to believe that what she was saying was genuine and true, she would say, I swear on the gay community that I'm telling you the truth, or
apparently,
whatever.
That's what, I mean, we never saw it on camera, but
that's apparently what happened behind the scenes.
The jury said that. And of course, I mean, she swore on everything. She swore on Mel, her girlfriend, she swore on her mom, she swore on, you know, whatever, you know, but, yeah. You know, that's what people do on the show, right? So that's not really all that weird, but it's just weird to, you know, when you come out, but not really come out, say that you're not into labels, that you're having this conversation about where you're swearing on the gay community. So I think that's kind of interesting. I don't have an opinion on it either way. I just think it was interesting that it came out, and we'll see what happens with it.
Wow.
When she re-enters the real world.
Well, it's too bad she lost. That would have been kind of cool that she won, and then we could have done more with it.
Yeah, it cost me $25.
Oh.
It cost me more than that, because I had to pay $25 to the winner, and I would have won $75.
Oh.
So that's a $100 swing.
Yeah.
Sort of, I guess.
Oh, well.
Darn it. Well, you know, I've spent a lot of time watching TV because, you know, either I'm traveling or I'm at home on the couch getting fat, right?
Yeah.
And, I want everybody to give me a little rope as I explain this, because I'm going to bring it back to poker. I was watching, catching up on Real Time with Bill Maher, one of my favorite shows, because it's one of the few shows that they actually mix political ideologies on there.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he has a point of view, and most of his guests and his audience has a point of view, but he always tries to bring in somebody from the other side to at least have a discussion, and not just as a punching bag, though sometimes it is.
Right.
But usually to bring another side to it, and I think that's important, because I like to think that I'm moderate a little bit, and at least if nothing else, I want to hear the other point of view before I make my decision, right? One of his guests on this recent show was from that other political persuasion, Linda Chavez, who worked in the first Bush White House, I think, or maybe the second. She worked in a Bush White House, right?
Okay.
So she was making the case on the show that federal regulation of two controversial issues, abortion, obviously through the Roe versus Wade decision from the Supreme Court, right. And then, of course, gay marriage, which the Supreme Court ruled on this year, might have gotten better acceptance from some Americans had it been done state by state. So her case was, you know, hey, obviously these are issues that were important to people. They were getting somewhere slowly as each progressive state adopted them, and other less progressive states eventually adopted it. But once the Supreme Court comes out right away and says, bam, this is a law of the land, all of a sudden people lose their stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
So I guess when I was sitting there listening to this conversation, it made me think about, obviously, poker. As you know, we've always been advocating, you know, a federal bill to bring back online game that we all missed, right? And it hasn't been happening. But slowly a couple states have been. And I've always been of the opinion that I don't like the state by state, because it's just going to be a bunch of, you know, weird laws that kind of have to work together. But I wonder if she actually has a point that, you know, if they came out tomorrow miraculously and Congress said, yay, online poker's great, would that be actually a bad thing because it would bring more attention to it? Or is it better that we just kind of wait 5-10 years for all the states to eventually come around to the fact that it's not that big a deal?
Well, here's just my first impression on this. When you're talking about abortion and gay marriage, the success of abortion or the success of gay marriage doesn't depend on whether or not we have enough people to do it.
That's very true, yes.
And so when I'm thinking about state by state, yeah, okay, so my state might appreciate it. My state might be big enough because Florida's pretty large, but, you know, like,
yeah, certainly. Delaware is not.
Delaware is struggling.
And they're pooled with Nevada, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. And the other thing, too, I guess the word there that you put in the notes here was acceptance. Had done state by state. Is poker going to be accepted if we go state by state? That, I don't think that's going to matter. I don't know. I don't see that as being... I don't even know if I agree with her initial point that abortion and gay marriage would have been accepted a little easier had it gone one state at a time or individually like that. I don't even know if I accept that as a legitimate point.
I think more of it was it takes time is what her point was, that, you know, some people just are stuck in their ways, and the more people around them become accepting of something that they're not accepting of, then they start to, that's when they start to realize maybe, hey, maybe this isn't as bad as I thought, or at least, you know, I don't mind. Whereas if you just come out and go, bam, it's the law of the land now. Now, you know, protests and all kinds of stuff happen. So it's probably not so much that. It's more just time.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, the thing, the world has changed a lot.
Sure.
You know, so, I mean, you know, we were talking about poker used to be Wild Wild West, right?
Yeah.
And played with guns, and now it's not at all. Only Pokemon's played with guns now. So, you know, so things change over time without any kind of real legislation or legalness, I guess. So that was more of it, I guess it was. But I think her cautionary tale was that, you know, don't say the Supreme Court ruling was great because, you know, while it allowed, you know, your gay friends to get married and you're happy about that, it's also caused a lot of people to have a lot more venom for the issue that didn't really have venom for the issue before.
Well, let me ask you this. Do we care that they have that venom for the issue now? If it's legal and people who need it and want it are getting it, what do they care if other people don't?
Well, I guess the fear is, and again, we're not talking, turning this into a political show, but these other two things we mentioned about it's legal now.
Right.
But the more people get upset, the more they look to try to stop it. I mean, we obviously have this woman in Kentucky that's, you know, going to jail rather than giving marriage licenses. I thought that's a huge deal, I guess. But so, you know, if there's all of a sudden people that didn't really know online poker existed or really didn't think it's that big a threat, now all of a sudden all their friends are going, oh my gosh, this is going to destroy our communities and our households, which is going to be the argument, right? Now they fire up and work to get some kind of law to, you know, overturn it. I got to think with the federal poker regulation, we've always talked about that it's going to have opt-out clauses for states, probably.
Right.
It's the only way it's ever going to get passed, right? So, you know, states like Utah can say, hey, this is not cool where we are, so we're going to opt out. So I guess that's the fear, is that, you know, if you get enough people, even here in Florida, which can be kind of evangelical at times, to say, hey, online poker is a sin, and then get the state to opt out. That would be the problem.
But how would that be solved by going state by state? It's, that would just, that, you know what I'm saying? It just makes it even easier for them to not do
it. Well, it's not the big headline splash. It's not the, hey, it's the law of the land now. I think that's the big thing. It's the law of the land, everything. Oh, my gosh. Whereas, again, if you would give it 5 or 10 years, and pretty soon, you know, I mean, who knows in 10 years what we're going to be doing on our phones and laptops, right?
Yeah.
Maybe at that point, poker is going to be, like, hilariously stupid. You know, sure, go ahead and play poker. It's not like you're doing X, you know, whatever X is, then it's going to be worse then, right?
Right.
So that's kind of, the case, so.
I don't know. I think I'll probably respectfully disagree with Luis Chavez here. I don't know. I just don't feel like that is enough to make, if poker got passed federally, people were saying, oh, it's a sin or whatever, they'd have to say, okay, well, so is fantasy football and betting on the horses, which could carve out for it.
Seeing fantasy football, right?
Right, exactly. And no one's
attacked here the last month, really.
Yeah, and I don't see the world ending. So, I mean, I don't know. I think the state-by-state thing just makes it easier for them to stop poker rather than federally doing it. And would they really have to have an opt-out clause? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
who knows? I mean, we don't have a bill right now. So,
right,
I mean,
right.
I guess it's all semantics at this point. I just got to think, as controversial as it is, that the only way it's ever going to get passed is if you can allow states to say, hey, all right, it's great for Nevada to play poker because that's what you degenerates do down there, but not here in Mormon country. Right?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying that it seems like state by state would make it worse than better. I mean, they'd have to actually go through the process of opting out and getting enough votes to do all that and everything, whereas...
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, from an expediency point of view, clear.
Federal
is the way we should go. And I'm not saying I don't disagree with that anymore. I'm just saying that taking the long view, looking 20 years down the road, you know, maybe it's worth waiting 5 or 10 years for it to not make that big splash than it is to have it in the next 5 years and create new enemies that right now are sitting at home bitching about something else.
Tell you what, I'll take my chances. Let's get federal poker passed and then take my chances on it. All right, any updates? Midnight Rose Hotel and Casino in Cripple Creek, Colorado will award one Annie Up Poker Cruise package for our January 24th sailing out of Los Angeles to the winner of its Annie Up Poker League that runs October 2nd to December 18th, and then another package to the player who logs the most cash game hours from November 1st to December 18th. All details for the promotion and Annie Up Cruises can be found at annieupcruises.com. And we just found out about this, so this is very exciting.
Yeah, really good. Getting some. We haven't really done a lot in Colorado. We tried, but it's tough to win those casinos over. So, very excited that Midnight Rose is offering this opportunity for folks up there to come on a cruise, and a perfect time to come on a cruise for people who live in Colorado, January.
Oh yeah, the LA cruise is starting to shape up nicely too, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which we're doing really well out there. And then don't forget to join us for the Pearl River Poker Open, an Annie Up Poker Tour series at Pearl River Resort in Mississippi. Coming right up on October 1st to the 12th. Room rates start at $49, and the winner of the $100,000 guarantee main event will appear on the cover of Annie Up. For more information, you can go to annieupmagazine.com/Pearl River. Hey, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 1 month. Is this like a subscription thing that they do? I was meant to ask you this.
No. He just posts videos on there. So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you become a member, then you get more videos.
All right. So it's 1 week, 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. And Annie Up listeners can save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/AnnieUp. Comes from Motor City Maestro.
Love it.
Says, I know you guys joke about not having any younger listeners for the show, but several of my friends and I love your show and enjoy listening to all the episodes, even from way back. What constitutes younger, I want to know.
Yeah, you know, he didn't really specify that. He could be 55.
That's right. We don't know. All right, the issue at hand. The term table bully. What the heck am I supposed to do when I get called this? People are trying to make me feel bad for betting with phrases like, you know you can check, right? And he's just going to push everyone out. I hear these remarks from several kinds of players spanning all the way from newbie to veteran. It surprises me, and I'm just wondering if there is some page of poker etiquette that I'm missing. I generally play 1-2 no limit at charity poker rooms in Michigan or at one of the three major casinos in Detroit.
Well, first of all, obviously he's clarified that he definitely is younger than us. Because he's our age. Epic gets called a tug of bully, right?
That's right. Nobody our age ever gets a big enough stack to be a bully.
And I was just up in Detroit last week, so I wish I would have had this email come in. I would have, you know, gone to one of the three major casinos in Detroit and called Motor City Maestro a bully. what I told him was, you know, don't pay these people, no, never mind. You put your own money on that table or buy it in for that tournament. You can play however you want within the rules of the game. And so I'm not going to not bet because some guy is upset that I'm going to bet. So if it calls you a table bully, I take it. What I would just say is thank you.
I can't help but agree.
So nice. Thank you.
I have to agree with you. I mean, here he goes. He's gonna look at his two cards they dealt him. Oh, how dare you look at your cards? Well, am I not allowed to look at my cards? Well, yeah, you are. Oh, okay. Am I not allowed to bet when I want to bet? You are. Then shut up. I'm happy to be the table bully. I would love to always be the table bully if I could be, because that means that you're all afraid of me, I can do whatever I want, and I've got more chips than you, and I'm going to win. So I would love to be the table bully. Accept it as a compliment.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, is he probably is, obviously, he's a younger, right? And these people that are probably saying, you know, you can check, right? It's never came out of the mouth of anybody less than 50. Ever, right? So he's probably playing with some of the older folks there, and that's just the way they are. Those folks like to go to the game. Poker is social for them. They like to show up. They like to play. They don't like to cause waves with each other, and they like to hit high hand promotions and then go home and watch Matlock. That's what they like to do. So when somebody like you or even us shows up and, oh my gosh, a raise? What's that? Is that legal in this room? They lose their minds. So that's on them. That's not on you. Now, obviously, if you're being a jerk about it, that's a different story. But I'm not getting any sense from this email that Motor City Meister is being a joke about it. He's just playing poker the way he wants to play it.
Absolutely. Don't be a jerk about it, actually, because they might make a table change. They might get away, and you want to play with players like this because they're intimidated by you, and you're
absolutely
running them over. So don't just be the nice guy. Say, oh, you know, I got a good hand. Or, you know, what am I going to do? You know, it's just I'm playing my cards, you know, and whatever. Just try to be this ingratiating kind of guy that, you know, that's what I would do. I mean, I would not want to piss anyone off. Don't tap on the aquarium. Just let them vent and just keep taking their money.
It's interesting because I always worry about this when I play limit, you know, which I don't get to play here in Florida. So it's when I travel and I sit down at the table. Obviously, if I have a big hand, I'm going to raise. But usually, I kind of, if I have like a hand that, you know, I'm getting spunky with,
right?
I'm going to wait to raise with that until I get a sense of the table. Because some tables are like that. They're like, they never raise preflop, ever. And that's just the table feeling. And so, you know, what I've discovered is when I raise in that situation, now I mean, you start to get the mumbles and the grumbles, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody raise? Oh, all right, whatever. And then, of course, everybody calls, right? So you still get nine people to the flop. But, you know, I don't want to change my game, but I also think I'm kind of cognizant of what the table feel is like. And I might not be as spunky as I normally am at a table where I know people are just going to be resentful over it.
Right. If it's not part of your game plan, then you don't want to call attention to yourself. If part of your game plan is to be the table bully or the table ass or something where you want to throw people off their game, then do it right away. But if you're someone that just wants to go in there, enjoy yourself, have a good time, you know, play your normal game and just let these people, let it roll off your back. There's nothing to, I would never change my game because people are upset by the way I play, especially if it works for me, you know. So you're doing fine. Hey, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. comes from our good friend David Bloomberg.
Yeah, our Survivor expert.
Yes, that's right.
I'm surprised he hasn't chimed in on my my Survivor fantasy team yet, because I did not select his favorite player, Shireen.
Shireen, oh, geez.
Yes, I would never select her. In fact, actually, the comment I made was, if I had the last pick and she was the last one left, I would draft Will.
All right, well, he says, on the flop of a no-limit cash game in a local card room, player A checks, player B bets $21, player C goes all in for $36 in a sloppy way such that there are just a bunch of reds and whites in a pile in front of her. Player D is thinking, and the dealer hasn't said anything. Player E puts $21 in the pot out of turn. Player D folds, and then player A goes all in for significantly more. At this point, the dealer notices that player E hasn't put enough in to cover player C's all-in bet, so player E was ordered to put in the 15 more because by putting in the 21, he effectively called the bet. Player B folds, and it's back around to player E, who also folds after having had to put in a full $36, as I just mentioned. Was that handled correctly? What were player E's options, if not? And I tell you what, I couldn't follow that.
Yeah,
reading
I'm
it.
Say, before I even read Elliot's response, I'm going to pop a couple ibuprofen here. wow.
Man, that's why you don't want to be a dealer. Don't want to be a dealer.
All right. Elliot says, action out of turn is binding, and player E's $21 belongs to the pot. Placing this money on the layout costs two players to act, player's DNA. Player A continued with the theme of acting out of turn and effectively trapped this $21 in the pot by moving all in. Had he asked for a correction of player E's wager, most poker rooms would allow the removal of the incorrect bet because no one had acted after him. Player D's lack of action in the spot is immaterial. In no limit or pot limit, all players must wait for any bets in front of them in the betting order to be physically moved to the betting area and completed or specifically verbalized. Any players acting when these conditions are not met can be considered to be acting out of turn. All this being said, player E's options in the situation should have been to fold and surrender 21 to the pot, or call player A's all-in wager to remain in the hand.
Yeah.
I'm going to trust Elliot on this because I really don't know what's going on here. So.
Yeah, it's true. No, I mean, it's true. What he said is right. It's just funny when you're talking about five people. Usually it's me and this one guy had this problem, but with five people, you're trying to remember who A was. But he's right. I follow the logic there. It's right. It's remarkable. And here's the other question I have, and not to make this too much longer, but I wonder if there are dealers out there who read up on all their rules and are really good at the rules and then do what they want to do, but the player, which is what they know is proper, then the players don't agree with this, so they call a floor comes over and the floor rules the players. I wonder if dealers and floors ever like get into it.
I'm sure they probably
I've never seen it, and I think that since the floors are generally considered their supervisors, I don't.
Yeah, I'll tell you this from the many dealer friends I have that are really good dealers, I think, are, you know, if somebody asks for a floor, they never fight that.
Right.
They call the floor over because the floor is the heavy. So when the floor comes over and rules, whatever, and then the players could be upset the floor and not the dealer. Now, obviously, I know what you're saying. It could be embarrassing if they say, hey, this is what it is, and the floor contradicts them, even if the dealer knows that they're right and the floor makes a bad call.
Yeah.
But again, that's not on them, you know.
Yeah,
they're dealing cards and move on to the next hand. And yeah, I mean, I imagine some of the good ones might go to the floor afterwards and like, you know, hey, let's talk about that again because maybe I'm misunderstanding the rule and have a conversation, and then the floor will be, oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I did screw up or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way it works. But I gotta think the really good dealers don't mind that. I think they take care of that away from the table because that's what makes them a good dealer, is not, you know, causing trouble at the table. They know their job is to deal the game and move the game along, not to be an active participant in the game.
Yeah, another reason why I couldn't be a dealer. Because I'd be like, nah, that's wrong, floor.
I'll say this, too. This is one of the things that I've always kind of fought against, and recently I realized why I'm wrong. So let's say the guy to my right announces raise, right?
Uh-huh.
I usually immediately fold at that point if I'm not intending on calling, right?
Right.
Say I have seven deuce, right? And dealers have increasingly been shoving my cards back to me, like, wait until the action's complete. And I'm like, well, he's raising. I'm not going to call whatever it is, so I'm folding. And they're like, yes, I know, but you should wait. And this is an example of why I need to wait. And I'm glad that I'm learning the game better because it really should wait even though I'm planning on folding, I should wait until that player finally puts out his bet.
Right.
And that way the dealer has a chance to correct it if it's wrong or like that. Because as soon as I fold, it's like that sprinkler effect, right? So the next guy, oh, it's my turn now, so I call. And now he calls without the guy saying how much he raised, and I'm causing trouble by trying being efficient. So
here's another reason, too, if you haven't thought of it yet. You're not being fair to the other players because now this guy could change how much he raises. If he only has to get out one player now instead of two.
That's very true.
He might change what he's raising. So that affects his decision, too. So, yeah, so you have to let them put the money out before you let it go. Hey, guess what? We get to wrap up on O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're still in that $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em Casino Cash game. The table dynamic has not changed much, other than the fact that we have been fighting for table captain status with another very solid player. Currently, we sit with 425. The blinds post, and this solid player makes it $10 to go from under the gun. A little below the table standard, but he's been making the $10 raise frequently tonight. He sits with about 350. It's folded to us in the MP, and once again we have queens, spades, and hearts. This under-the-gun raise from this solid player screams strength, but we've got some of that too. We're going to play back at him. We make it $25 to go. It's folded back around to the end of the gun, who seems to genuinely think for a time before making it $60 to go. Even though we've been tangling with this guy for the proverbial table captain title, there has been an air of mutual respect between us, and he seems like a pretty good guy. I doubt he's trying to make a move here, but maybe this is something like ace-king. I don't want to play for stacks right here, especially since we are worried this might be kings or aces. Even with that worry in our minds, I still want to see what he does on the flop. We make the call. With about 120 in the pot, it comes down the 10 of clubs, 7 of spades, tray of hearts. Our opponent does some more genuine thinking before making a $100 bet into the pot. What's the move?
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure O'Malley already gave us our answer. He said he respects his opponent's play, and he doesn't think that he's making a move on us. And O'Malley doesn't want to play for stacks here, right? So it's possible that it's jacks or maybe nines or eights, but this really seems like aces or kings to me. And if we call a raise here, it's going all in on the turn or river, and we don't want to play for stacks, so I think we need to fold.
Yeah, you know, if this player doesn't respect our game or thinks we're loose, I might think his re-raise pre-flop was just because he didn't believe us. But if he thinks we only re-raise with big hands, then I'm folding right now. So let's fold and be cautious since it is a cash game, and we don't. It's not like it's forced the action. So, okay, here comes part two.
Hello again. We were in a similar situation to this one last week, and it was a fairly easy decision. However, this time our opponent is different, and that changes everything. I think this is a good illustration of how changing just a few factors in a hand can lead to an entirely different outcome. Our opponent raised from under the gun, then re-raised us. That could be ace-king, and his $100 bet on the flop could signify a continuation bet. However, he started the hand with 350 and has put 45% of his stack in up to this point. I don't think he'd be doing that on a bluff or even a semi-bluff. Even though this is a 1-2 game, this guy is more sophisticated than your average 1-2 player. There really isn't a draw that he could have. So in my mind, the message he's sending us here is he has no problem putting in the other 55% of his stack. And that to me is ace-ace or king-king. We fold. Our opponent mucks his cards and rakes in the pot. Kings? We ask. But he just smiles. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, in poker, two similar situations can have very different outcomes. As long as you pay attention to the differences, you'll be just fine. I hope to see you on the felt.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good analysis of the situation and obviously confirms our original thinking. And I'll remind folks, a bad fold is better than a bad call any day.
Yeah. Since he didn't show, I'm going to go ahead and say this is a good fold and pat ourselves on the back.
Right, exactly.
Hi, this is Team PokerStars Pro Vanessa Russo, and you are listening to the Ante Up PokerCast.
You gotta fight for your right!
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, who specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. And it comes from Dan Hill.
Cool.
And he said this hand occurred in his local league. He says, for background, this league has 50 members and plays 10 events per year. The top two win a World Series of Poker main event seat plus travel money. Wow. Pretty big league. And third place wins a 1,500 WSOP entry. Monthly cash prizes are worth the top seven. The point structure is very flat. Monthly points range from 20 for first place down to 1 for 17th place. And this hand occurred during month one of this season, so very early on.
Okay.
We had just redrawn for the final table. Average chip stack is 75,000. We have 180,000 and are the chip leader. There are several short stacks with less than 40,000. Blinds are 2,000, 4,000 with a 400 ante, and we are in the big blind. Action folds around to under the gun plus 2, who raises to 10,000, and it folds around to us in the big blind with 7 of spades, 7 of clubs. And before you answer, he says the villain is a friend of ours, a solid ABC player who recently has begun to incorporate more creativity into his play. He is aggressive, but will be back down quickly when faced with pressure. I believe he tends to overestimate his opponent's ranges and naturally assume he's beat unless he has a monster. He enters the hand with 95,000.
Okay. Generally, I just call this. I don't want to be out of position against someone who, if he's ABC and he's fairly early in the, you know, in early position, it's not.
Yeah, I got plus two at a final table.
Yeah, final table. So, I mean, you know, he's clearly playing decent. And he could do some damage to us, although not too much. We'd still be one of the chip leaders if we even went all in and lost. But I generally don't. Sometimes I will re-raise with a hand like this because I've got a made hand, and I don't necessarily believe that everyone has a pair at the table. And I'll see if this guy really has. If he, you know. And did you say that he would back down to?
Yeah, he says he will back down quickly when faced with pressure.
Knowing that, I might raise. But I'm going to be out of position if he calls. And if he calls, I know I have to flop a set, probably. So,
Well, a set or a
really low board,
right?
Yeah. But even then, if he's calling, he might even have that bigger pair, like jacks or something, too. But you're right. Probably something like 6-4-9 might be great for us, or 6-4-deuce or something. So... but I might re-raise knowing that he backs down. I like to take that angle right now. Because just to play it differently. I mean, generally, if he's playing ABC and I'm playing ABC, then you know you're probably going to lose. So I would like to probably raise here then. Just because of that one thing where he backs down if you're getting some serious pressure. I'm the chip leader. I can eliminate him. I can end his tournament. He knows this. So maybe he won't believe it. But generally, if he tends to back down, I might just make it a good 35,000 and say, all right, and we're drawing a line in the sand here. And I might even go to races with him with it if I don't believe that he has a pair. But I'm going to go up with it. I'm gonna make it like 35,000 and just say, hey, you know what? I've got the huge stack here. Even if you felt, and if I, you know, didn't felt you or whatever and doubled you through, you know, I'm still going to have 80,000. So I don't know. I think I'm going to make a raise here. I believe it or not. I normally I wouldn't, but I think just knowing that about him, and he's a friend of mine, I might know he'll fold. You tend to know your friends better than your enemies at the poker table. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think I may a 35,000 raise might be in order here and hope he folds. And if he doesn't, you know, take it down after the flop.
Yeah, I guess this is my problem with raising, and I'm sure a lot of people would raise in this situation, and that's fine. I'm not saying I wouldn't, but what I'm worried about here is really we're raising here based off of the description of the villain, right?
Yeah.
So what we're our raises right now intending to do is to get him to fold right now. I'm going, okay, so I had whatever, King Jack or something like this, and I was just trying to steal the blinds, and you raised, so I'm out and picked up the 10,000, right? Mm-hmm. Plus the blinds and stuff. The problem is if he doesn't fold, what do we do at that point? So one of two things is going to happen. Either he's going to shove on us, and I know you've already made the decision that you don't mind losing half your stack here, or taking a chance of losing half your stack, I should say. Obviously, we could be good here for their sevens. That seems a little reckless to me when we have so many short stacks here at the table where we can pick off and ship up. So I'm not really excited about playing for stacks pre-flop right now. And if he just calls, then the problem is now we've taken the lead, and now we've got to, you know, start representing some stuff if we don't hit this hitter set or get that, you know, weak board that we're talking about. And now puts us in the driver's seat out of position. And I don't really know if I want to be in that. So I'm thinking I'm just going to call here. I mean, it's a small call for our ship's deck. I'm not necessarily set mining. Obviously, I'd love to hit my set here, but it kind of gives me some more options and let me kind of see how the hand plays out. And it's possible, obviously, using the same thing we're talking about, that he backs down quickly and faces pressure, that we could still win this hand with nothing by applying pressure later on.
Well, the one thing about Nolan and Hold'em is on a third or fourth level, that's where you're playing to really be a decent player, is you're up on different levels and you're playing the person. They always talk about it's not a game of cards, it's a game of people. And if we know this about this guy, and we have a good hand, we don't have a bad hand, and would a big blind really be doing this with 7-7, this guy's going to think he's probably got a big hand. So unless I've got a monster as the villain, and I tend to say, I'm going to back down, then I think a raise is in order, just because of we're playing the person, not the cards. I don't even think 7-7 really matters here. If you felt like exposing this weakness in the guy's game, you could do it with any two. But the fact that we have a made hand, that it's not a bad hand, that we're the chip leader by a massive amount over this guy, at least, and the rest of the table is a lot of 40,000 chips. You know, the average chip is 75. So even if we lost it all, we'd still be more than average.
Right, right. I'm fine if we get involved in this hand and we end up losing half our stack because it's still a significant stack. I guess I'm just saying I don't really, you know, I would hate to get it all in here pre-flop with sevens and have them turn over jacks, tens.
Right, of course.
Something like that, right? Which is possible. It's also possible that he has ace-king and then we're flipping, which is better. And it's also possible he has, like, fives or sixes, which is great for us, so... it just seems like a lot of gamble here. I mean, when I'm the chip leader, you know, going back to our listener spotlight, I don't mind being the table bully, but I like to be a responsible table bully. And I could put a lot more pressure on these 40,000 chip stacks at a table than this 95 in this situation.
The other thing, too, is that...
But I'm also saying I'm not taking out the possibility of applying pressure later in this hand. You know, he might be able to trap more of his money to the point where he doesn't want to go out. It'd still apply pressure. We just don't have to do it right now, I guess.
Right. The other thing, too, to take into consideration is that this is a league, and so it's like, he said 10 events a year, and this is early, so it could be even event one or whatever.
Yeah, it is event one.
It's event one. So, I mean, you know, you're already at the final table. You've probably already locked up some points. And now you're trying to, you know what I mean? So it's a long season. It's not like that day you're getting paid. You know, you're trying to, I'm just saying you've got room for error here at this point of the season.
That's actually a good point to think about. Yeah, depending on how the points work. Yeah, you get more 20. Although it doesn't look like the points are flat, he said. So, you know, it'd be different if you win and you get 20 points and second place gets 10 points or something drastic like that.
Right.
It sounds like it's 20 and 19. So I don't even know if the points are really that big of a thing the way
he said cash is given to the top seven.
Right. So we're playing for cash. Really, I think the bigger consideration is just like a normal tournament, we're playing for cash right here.
Right.
I don't think the points really come in based on the way he's describing it. But yeah, you're right. In a non-flat point thing, then yeah, I would definitely want to be more aggressive and try to win as many of these events as possible.
So if the goal here is to just, you've already probably guaranteed points because top seven, you're at the final table already and you're chip leader, you're probably going to make it seventh place. Even if you lost to this guy with an all-in, you'd still probably be in third place.
Yeah, well, you're not thinking points. I mean, I guess the way to think about it, let's think that this is not a point thing, this is a payout only.
Right.
And if you got, you know, $200 for winning, and you got $190 for second and $180 for third. That's kind of what we're talking about here. So, you know, at that point, I don't really, there's not much room to gamble there.
Right.
No reason to gamble there because the payout difference isn't all that much. Whereas, let's say it's, you know, 2,000 for first and 600 for second and 300 for third. Now, all of a sudden, if I'm 180,000, yeah, you're right. I'm going to be a maniac here. Get people out because I have a huge stack. I can do a lot of damage and I need to win because the value of winning is so much more bigger than second place.
See, let me ask you this, though. Just play devil's advocate with you. You would take more chances when there's more up for grabs? Because to me, right now, since it doesn't matter, everything's flat, and I'm not going to get that much more for a reward, I might as well just, who gives a crap what I'm doing here, and try to play the person and try to be a little more aggressive now, because because if I take a huge chance and lose out on something that's so valuable versus playing cautiously and squeaking into that valuable thing. I'm not sure if I agree with that. I mean, I understand when guys are playing for poker for the most money, they play aggressively because that's where the big money is, the top three, that kind of thing. But in this situation, you know, the way we're playing this, it's flat, so we're not going to gain anything by winning this tournament anyway, much more than if we finished 10th. So if we're not going to get that much, why am I even caring about being cautious?
So that's a very good point. You can use the same argument for both arguments.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
That's kind of weird. So in this case, I'm going to play the person and the league, and I'm going to raise.
I'm going to call, so let's see what happens.
Okay.
Here it says, in this particular spot, I'm reluctant to overplay my small pair and risk coin flipping at this stage of the tournament. I'd probably have to lay down to a 4-bet, though I realize by calling, I'm giving up the opportunity to take down 20,000 pre-flop. Not exactly just set mining, but I like to call and reevaluate my options after the flop. Well done, sir.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree with him. I agree with him with the 4-bet thing. So, really, if I risk 35 right now to take down 20 for nothing, I think it's worth it because if he comes over the top, I'm still at 150 in 145. I'm still chip leader. You know, and I took a chance on a situation.
That's the best point you've made so far, sir.
Yeah. I think all my points are gold.
I didn't say they weren't. I'm just saying that was the best one.
Thank you.
Although I'm not saying that at all. All right. Here says, question one. Is my call wrong here? Given I'm out of position and given the stage of the tournament, should I re-raise pre-flop? Obviously, we have two schools of thought on that.
Right.
So we go to the flop. Heads up. Flop is jack of clubs, 7 of hearts, 4 of hearts. Bingo!
Nice.
Ricky Tikki Tavi. Despite the 2 hearts, I'm way ahead of whatever range we could sign to the villain. Man, what do we do?
Well, the only thing you're worried about now is draws and jacks. So, you know, pocket jacks. So
sounds like a band. I see draws and jacks tonight, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to the stage right now. Draws and jacks. All right. So, I mean, I love this flop, and I want to protect, but I'm going to have to go crazy to do it because really... I mean, 5-6, really? 8-9, maybe? 9-10? Those are hands that are draws, and then hearts. So, yeah, you got to protect it. You got to give... Yeah, you took, you know, although the way I was playing it, it would have been I've taken control of it. Right now, I've just called. If you bet out, now you're saying, okay, I had the big blind, then I just happened to hit the hands cards I have. And if he has ace-king, he's going away, which if he had ace-king, he would have gone away to your preflop raise anyway, so... I'm going to bet, though, to protect my hand. So, let's see. He called. So, there's like 20-something thousand in the pot, right? So, I'd probably bet 15, 18, something like that.
All right. I kind of consider this, like, you know, I've played a couple of heads-up tournaments this year, which have been a lot of fun. And I kind of consider this a heads-up tournament hand here. You know, in a normal tournament, I'm worried about, you know, protecting against draws and things like that. But I got this guy dead to rights right now, I think. I'm pretty confident about it. So I'm going to, like, this is going to be a throw that bobber out in the water and lure him in kind of hand. So, and I'm going to take the chance that a heart gets there or a straight card gets there just because it's much less likely that he has it. Now, I could be wrong and look like an idiot here, but... I think we're going to give too much value in this situation by betting out. I'm going to let him, you know, continue to walk and bet, and I'm going to walk the dog here.
All right, so you're going with the idea that this guy backs down when you face pressure, and if we bet, we'll lose value, he may fold.
Yeah, I think he might just fold here. He's going to look at that flop and go, gosh, I don't have any of that. So, and this guy's a really good player, and he's got me out chipped, and all right, I took a stab. I'm down to 85,000 here, still plenty of chips over most of these people. I'm not going to get into a pissing match with this guy right now. And he's out. Whereas if we check, you know, he might look at that and like, that flop couldn't really hit anybody, so I'm going to bet. So at least we get that bet, even if we don't check raise, which I don't think I would do. I think I would check call. And then see what happens on the turn. And might, you know, squeeze another 20,000, 30,000 out of him.
So you think it's impossible for him to hit this flop or
I'm
down over?
Impossible.
Or it's difficult for him to have had.
He could have jacks right now, and he could have his dead.
He could
right?
have a set. Or an overpair where you would have gotten his whole stack.
He could
stack.
Have ace, king of hearts, and have draws. There's all kinds of things he could have. I'm just saying, I think it's much less likely in this scenario than in a spot where we're five-handed going to this flop, where you really have to protect.
Okay. All right, so you're going to check, and
plus,
if he bets...
the other thing, too, let's go back to what we all talked about pre-flop, too. We have 180,000 before this started, and he has 95,000. So if we go back to pre-flop where you were quite happy getting it all in with sevens there and losing half your stack, and I'm not disagreeing with that, nothing changes here, right?
Right.
So if we slow play and we let him catch up on some kind of weird combination and we lose half our stack, then we're no worse off than we were before that we got it all in pre-flop, right?
Right. All right, so if you check and he bets, you're merely calling.
I think I am, yeah.
And if he shoves, you're obviously calling.
Oh, absolutely, okay. Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, I'm going to stick with my bet just because it's a really wet board regardless. He did say that he was getting creative, so he might have something that fits in there. So I'm going to bet regardless because even though he took control, I feel like a check here could let something catch up to me that could beat me, and I want to get value for what I have right now. So I'm going to bet, and you're going to check.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so here it says, I consider leading out, but ultimately decide to check with the intent to check raise. All right, so we thread the needle between our two advice.
Yeah, I guess so.
The villain, however, does not abide by my plan and checks behind.
See, only the dude abides.
There's a question two. Should I bet the flop? I figured villain would continuation bet a vast majority of the time. I'm going to say I agree that he would have c-betted, and I would not have bet it the flop. So he tricked us all. Because I don't think you were expecting a check behind either.
I was not. I was expecting some sort of bet there. But I was hoping to get value for my bet.
So now that he checks behind, so I don't know whether that means that he just missed this and he didn't want to take a stab at it, which is kind of weak, actually. Or whether he does have a draw, and now if one of these draws hits, now I got to rethink how excited I am about my set and willy-nilly losing half my stack.
Well, here's the problem, is that both of those things, there's no way for you to know now.
Exactly. Right.
I mean, if you had bet and he had a draw, he might have just called. If he had a bigger hand, he would have shoved over the top of you. But now you've checked and let him check behind. Now you have no information from this guy. You can't narrow his range except for what you think he might have done pre-flop with that raise. So, to me, I think that's the problem with checking. So,
well, I would say this now: if a draw doesn't complete on the turn, I'm definitely betting now.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You're going to get value now. It's only a street later. You have to bet. I don't know.
I don't know what I'm doing there if the draw gets there now, though.
Yeah, and which draw, too?
They check all the way down, and then which kind of gives a value, but also protects you a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have bet.
I'm sure you would have.
Well, I'm answering his question. He said, should he have bet? I said, yeah. If something comes on the turn that's scary, even if it's scary, I mean, you were willing to let the heart get there 10 minutes ago, and you were willing to let the draw get there because you have him so dead to rights as a heads-up hand and all this stuff. So why would it now change it because he checked? He could be checking because he missed completely and whiffed, so it's 50-50 in your mind. I would still bet. Scary.
Right. All right. So the turn is the five of spades. So our board now is jack of clubs, seven of hearts, four of hearts, five of spades. So I guess that crazy 6-8. 3-8. Is that what it would be?
Yeah, 6-8 makes a straight.
Yeah, so those get there, but not the hearts, and that seems very unlikely that actually was the draw that this guy might be on if he was on a draw, right?
Even if he has 6'8", which, you know, hey, if this guy is 6'8", then I guess he is adding creativity to his play. But even if he has 6'8", you got 10 outs. So, you know, unless it's 6'8 of hearts and then one of them straight flush. Right. No, I guess it's not an out, though. But anyway, you still have outs. So even if something goes horribly wrong here, I was willing to go bust. Not bust, but I was willing to double him up anyway pre-flop, so...
Right, yeah. So nothing really changes for you the rest of the time.
No, not me.
You know, you're not going anywhere, right?
But I'm gonna make the same bet I would have made on the flop.
Which is what?
What'd I say, about 18? 15, 18, something like that?
Yeah, 26 in the pot, so...
Yeah, about 18 or 19, something like that.
Well, winner, winner, chicken dinner, that's exactly what our hero bet.
18?
Yep.
Okay.
Seems fair to me.
Right? Yeah, that's fine.
The villain, however, wastes no time in announcing all-in for 85,000.
I got a set of sevens, I guess. I got a call. It's
well,
one hand.
Exchange, right? This is what we talked about. So, I mean, we set out our plan, and we said, hey, we're not going anywhere. So
yeah.
it kind of sucks now, right? Because now this guy did nothing on the check, or on the flop, and then all of a sudden, now we put a bet in. All in, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to...
Slow playing a set, maybe?
Yeah, what I'm
if
hoping
was,
for is a set of fours or a set of fives.
Fours would be awesome, right?
Yeah.
Jacks, then, well... Bummer. But, you know, that distinction is nothing from what we talked about. If he has a set of jacks here, we talked about trying to get it all in pre-flop, right?
Yeah.
He's not going to muck his jacks at that point, right? So,
right.
Nothing changes at this point.
Yeah, I don't think anything changes. I have to call the all in, but it's going to suck if he turns over 6-8, because you can't even put him on
that. Oh, it
is,
but, I mean, you can't put him on that, right?
Or 3-6, yeah, I know.
The final table, he's going to be raising with 8-6.
Yeah, under the gun plus two, raising with 8-6. Interesting. Although they just redrew for the final table, so maybe he's just trying to steal some quick chips because no one really knows.
I can get that, but not under the gun plus two is not a chip stealing.
Yeah, I know.
Spot.
I know. That's crazy. Yeah,
especially when you have all these short stacks of 40,000 that are, it's 10 big blinds, and even less of an M because of the antes, right? Those guys are going to be shoving with all kinds of things.
All right,
I'm not
so
get involved with an 8-6 under the gun plus two.
Are there hands that we beat that would make this call or make this shove? Because let's say it's aces through queens, okay, would have bet that flop. So what hands do we beat now that would do that with? There's no sense in thinking jack seven is out there. The only hand is 4-4, and even 4-4 bets that flop, and we don't beat jack. So really, what hands are we beating? That
would
have played
it this
way.
This could be it's possible. I'm not saying it's probable. It's possible, though, that this guy knows us. We called his raise pre-flop with a massive chip stack so we could defend our big blind with all kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
We checked the flop, and we checked behind. Now we're just betting to see if we could take this pot down. And by shoving all in now, he could believe that we have nothing. It's just taking a stab at it.
But he's kind of an ABC player.
He could have ace queen. He could have jack 10. Well, not jack 10, but he would have bet probably. But and this could be a shove with nothing, just thinking that my nothing is better than your nothing.
Okay, but isn't he ABC? ABC players don't shove there.
He also says he's aggressive.
Yeah, aggressive,
and
but.
He has been recently incorporating more creativity into his play.
Hmm. I just can't imagine somebody putting their tournament
Again,
life
I didn't
on
say
a bluff.
It's probable. I said it's possible.
Especially since, you know, we called his raise and then bet the turn, and now the turn completes a lot for somebody in the big blind who might be defending their blind, could be defending their blind with anything here now, and
right.
He could have gotten there. And so to bluff us when we're saying we got there or whatever now, it doesn't seem likely to me.
Could be getting frisky with ace-jack and creative and checking behind, hoping to trap us and try to get us to do what exactly we did is bet into him. That could be a possibility, and we have that crushed.
Well, he's going
really
up against a big
jack,
blind, though. That's the thing. He would have bet that flop, I think. Going up against a big blind, he would have said those cards could have hit. I better protect a little bit and get some value out of this.
True,
ace-jack.
But it goes back to what I was saying. If either of these players are thinking of it as I was, as a heads-up hand, then it's more trying to trap with getting any piece of it.
Yeah.
And he could have thought with ace-jack, hey, I hit my card. If I check now, I'm going to show weakness. This big bad guy with all the chips is now going to bet out on the turn, and I'm going to trap those chips rather than betting now and having them fold. It's the same thing that we're talking about, just in reverse.
Yeah.
I guess what it comes down to is we really have no idea what this guy has.
I know, we don't. I mean,
we have a set of sevens, which is a pretty good hand in the situation, in the spot, so.
Yeah, it's like the fourth nuts.
Yeah, so, I mean, I really, we just spent a lot of time talking about nothing, because we're probably going to call here, and it's possible that we're only losing to a couple hands, right?
Yeah, like I said, if
one of them seems possible.
Right, because the other hands that might do this, I think would have bet earlier. So, the only hands that, to me, it's either a bluff or a straight. I don't think it's a set of jacks. It could be a set of fours, too. All right, so it's either a bluff, somehow this guy raised with 6-8, or he's got a set of fours. And even set of fours, I think, tried to protect their hand. Because we had the option of a check raise. Once this guy doesn't bet, he didn't protect. We had the option of a check raise, thinking it was going to happen.
I'd be surprised even if 8-6 didn't bet that flop. Why wouldn't you bet that flop?
Well, because it's a gutter.
Right, but you took control of the hand, right?
Oh, right,
so you're expected to C-bet right there. Those are the kind of C-bets that I like, where I can C-bet with junk, and my junk didn't quite get there, but has some possibility. And now, when I hit that turn, you know, it doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
And then no one could put you on that, because why would you bet with 8-6, and then why would you C-bet with 8-6 there? And then when you hit that, then you turn it over, and people are like, you got to be kidding me. Did I just lose to that?
Yeah.
I would totally bet that with 8-6. I wouldn't draw there.
All right, let's back up then. So all the more reason if...
But I'm saying other people might.
Yeah, he's an ABC solid player, but he's creative. He should have... Why did he not C-bet? Why did he not C-bet no matter what? Because you controlled this hand.
So that's what I'm saying. Most likely, I'm thinking it might be ace-jack or something like that, where he's just trying to reel us in to make a bet on the turn, which we did, and now he's going to punish us for it. That seems most likely to me right now.
So we're calling then.
Yeah, well, we're calling regardless.
Right, so we're just trying to flesh it out.
Exactly.
All right, I call.
All right, our hero says, I go into the tank for a long time. I have fourth nuts here, but it's hard to think trade six or 6-8 are really in the villain's range. I'm worried about jack-jack, but there are many realistic hands in his range that I'm beating, over pairs and flush draws. In the end, I figure worst case, he has the straight, but I still have 10 outs. That's actually a good point.
Right.
So I make the call. He quickly tables the six of hearts, eight of hearts.
Oh, man. This guy flopped the world, and he did it with 6-8.
Yeah, river's a blank, and half my stack is gone.
Oh,
question
man.
Three, what other factors should I have considered on the all-in bet? Is this the right decision or not worth the gamble given my chip position and stage of the tournament? In retrospect, with this hand, exact hand, I don't think he's folding his inside straight flush draw no matter what I did post-flop. That's absolutely true.
Right, I don't think he's going anywhere. But, you know, and we're not trying to be results-oriented, but if you played the player pre-flop, he doesn't stick around at 6-8. You make it 35,000 to go, that's almost half his stack. He's not going half his stack for 6-8. He's not going to the mat with 6-8. If you played the player rather than the situation, I'm just saying. I'm not saying
right,
that
exactly.
I mean the right thing.
That's
but,
a good point.
Right? He doesn't go to the mat with that.
The other thing, too, I'll go back to what I said. I'm surprised he didn't C-bet this. This is exactly the kind of hand that
flop.
I would love to C-bet with, right?
That's a huge flop.
So that hearts get there, your hearts are disguised, because why wouldn't you just take the free card, right? And the straight gets there, you can't put that on it. Why would you take the free card? That's exactly why you bet, is to do the exact opposite of what your opponent thinks you're going to do. And it's justified because you pre-flop raise, so you're expected to bet there.
Yeah, how does he not bet that flop? I don't think that's creativity there. That was weird.
No, it's weakness. Yeah, and weak. Even if we check raise them at that point, then yeah, put it all in. I got 1,000 outs here.
Yeah. Wow. Huh. That's a weird way to play the hand.
That being said, he got our stack. So.
right. He got lucky.
Yeah.
But wow, and he was so fortunate that it was a five too, because that's the card that, you know, if a heart comes, he doesn't get our money probably.
Right. Exactly.
Probably, or maybe, but maybe. We have a reason to fold more than that straight. Right. You don't think that straight gets there before the hearts do, so. Oh, man, tough hand, man. Sorry, Dan. But you get a lesson, so that's pretty good. You got two lessons. You get a lesson from there, and you get a lesson from Tom Gallagher.
Said epilogue, I managed to not crash and burn and finish second. 9 more months to play like that, and I'll be making my main event debut.
Nice.
Good job. All right.
Keep us up to date, Dan. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.